Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. And tonight I'm here in the studio, Studio X, Ground Zero here in lovely Lehigh, Utah. Hey, and you know, speaking of which, I was at the city hall waiting for Katie to come out of a class. Have you seen the statue of Porter Rockwell in front of the city hall?
It's not. What?
There's a statue of Porter Rockwell in front of the city recreation center. He's got a gun. He's got a six shooter.
Really?
I have pictures. I will post them along with this. And there's another statue that we need to talk about sometime. The guy he's the founding bishop, Bishop Evans of Lehigh, Utah. And in his right hand is a square, and in his left hand is a compass, and his left hand is held to the square.
In a cupping shape. Oh, my.
I don't know what it means.
I'm not either.
I'm just putting
that's
it out
how,
there.
That's how the he's standing in the statue.
In front of the Lehigh. But I digress. to my right is Zilpha. Hi, Zilpha.
Hey, John.
Welcome. Welcome to Mormon Expression, Zilpha.
You are in a good mood tonight, aren't you?
We'll get to that later. And we have Heather. We're packing in the All-Stars tonight. Hi,
Am
Heather.
I an All-Star now? Hello.
You are what you wear. That's what my mom always said. But then she always gave me hand-me-downs, so I don't know exactly what the message was there.
I thought it was you are what you eat.
Oh, I
not
hope
for
not.
His mom.
and Amy. Hi, Amy.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back.
Welcome home.
And we do have a fabulous studio audience tonight. Welcome, fabulous studio audience. As always, if you're in the vicinity, you can drop me an email at john@mormonexpression.com and find out when we're doing a recording. And you're welcome to come and enjoy a libation and a fabulous recording
drink a
session.
Water.
What's that?
Or a drink of water.
Yeah.
Libation not required.
That's true. True enough. Okay. Today, we're recording this on Sunday, October 9th, and we just had our Mormon Expression picnic a few hours ago.
And it was a blast.
We had a lot of fun. We filled up the pavilion. I guess around 150 people or so there.
I didn't count, but it was full and it was fun.
Yeah. And, you know, my reminder to everybody is, you know, we're all sort of in this together, be you wherever you are, and there's others just like you, and you know, you need to make effort to go out there and meet people. It's not as scary as it seems, and you'll be glad you did. Every time we do it, you know, a lot of our closest friends, Zilpha, we've met at picnics and things like this, mm-hmm. and every time we meet new people who look so scared when they first get there. And then they realize that, you know, no matter where you are in your faith journey, inside or outside the church, you're just people, and we're all sort of cut from the same stock, as it were.
Yep.
Now, it's our atheistic kids that are going to be the problem, but we were all raised upright. Okay. I guess as long as we're doing our announcements, on November 18th, Friday night, 7 p.m. in Salt Lake City, University of Utah campus is our next live show. We are going to be doing Mormon fight songs for dummies and sing along. And I went to the bookstore yesterday and I have the full gamut of hymn books running all the way back to 1835. So we are poring over those with judicious expediency.
That is an oxymoron.
And we're going to sing the hell out of those songs and we're going to talk about them.
And that will be fun too.
Yeah. So mark your calendars. Come on out. The evening is free of charge. Are we going to be out? We gave some fabulous gifts at this one. Should we have a giveaway of something or the other? What if we gave out like an iPod? Because we are a podcast.
Clever.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could do that.
Let me ruminate
Shameless
over that one.
Self promoter.
And also bring, some, you know, a couple dollars. We're going to sell some drinks and snacks.
When you say drinks, you mean like Diet Pepsi.
Yeah. Pepsi products or Coke. I can't remember one or the other
the
theater
only
allows.
Let us sell one or the other.
I have to check with them which one it is.
But. Well, it's the one that the church owns, right?
So wait a minute. So this little hymn sing-along is going to be where?
At the Post Theater.
Okay.
Which is on the University of Utah campus. It's actually up in Fort Douglas, which is right above the University of Utah. If you type in Post Theater or whatever, you'll find it.
Yep. So we'll have snacks and drinks, but the event is free.
True that.
And the event is the singing.
And the recording of the dummies podcast about the hymns.
Okay. We will have
sing the songs.
Did I miss like half of that conversation just now?
Oh, for crying out loud. We've been announcing it for like a month.
But it's good because if you're not clear, then there's probably a lot of people who aren't clear. So
yeah, so we're recording the podcast. Audience is welcome to participate. Throw their comments in. We're going to talk about the Mormon fight hymns.
He means the
Spirit of God
that talk bombastically like about others.
Yeah,
you know the others.
Like if we were a football team, these are the songs.
And,
we would
and some
sing
of the some
right
of the hymns have been altered through time, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about that and we'll sing them.
That is joyous. I bet you Elise is going to be there.
That's a very clever idea.
That'll be fun, right?
Thanks. We're trying to decide if we're going to have an organ or an orgy.
Oh, sorry.
Larson. We're trying to decide if we're going to have a organ or like a jazz trio play background. So we're still working out the details.
What about some drums? Can we get some drumming going?
Drums would be cool.
You can vote.
I want to vote on just the organ. So it's as reminiscent of
as haunting as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
We do have to bring our own organ in. So
yeah,
that's
where
sort
are
of
we going
to
get that?
Well, couldn't you get a keyboard that you can make sound like an organ?
I'm sure we can.
I have a keyboard. Actually, Dupree has a keyboard that can be organized.
A Casio.
Nice. Well, that would work. Does it all have a stand?
We can fashion a stand.
As fascinating as this is for our listeners, I'm sure.
We'll cut that part
maybe,
out.
Maybe we should move.
Yeah.
Before. Okay, so tonight is another in our top 10 list. Our top 10 tonight is the top 10 must-see Mormon sites in Salt Lake City. So you're coming into Salt Lake City. You have a few hours of layover. You want to get your Mormon history game on. You want to go see what's interesting to see. That's what this list is. Now, this isn't just everything that's interesting to see in Salt Lake City, or, you know, there's some really interesting sites outside of Salt Lake, but this is limited to Salt Lake and it's in its suburbs. All right. Well, I should say this list is kind of controversial among the way these lists, if you like to see the underside, I usually write them, and then I throw them out to the Mormon Expression family, and then they are supposed to critique them. And this one generated some controversy, but we'll hit that as we go up the list. Number 10 at the bottom of the list is the Granite Vaults,
which is where it belongs.
You mean it belongs at the bottom of the list?
Bottom as far down as possible.
Okay, so the Granite Vaults are these great big vaults. No one knows. Well, I guess somebody does, but I don't. So that's the same as no one knows, right? They're the great big vaults up in the mountain that are hewn into these granite caves, where they put big gates and fences and security guards and who knows what to keep you out of there, where according to the church, they keep the genealogical records of the all these microfish and stuff.
We all know they have the Sword of Laban in there.
Oh, I thought it was like Futurama. They have the heads of the old prophets in a glass jar.
Oh, that's even better.
We don't really know what's up there. This is like a Discovery Channel, you know, like history thing. We can just ask questions. What's in the Granite Vaults?
And which
mountain
is this?
It is up in one of those canyons up there.
I think it's Little Cottonwood.
Is it Little Cottonwood?
I think it might be Big Cottonwood, but it's one of those two.
The other interesting thing about the site where they built them, it was one or the main quarry site for where they hewed the granite to build the Salt Lake Temple. So you can go up there. You can't get actually you can only get to the security fence. And then you can see them, you can see where the old blast sites and some of the other areas from when they pulled those down. This is one of those that I got a little bit of lip, frankly, on putting this on the list. And
why did you look at your wife when you said that?
And I looked away.
But I think it's interesting just because it sort of speaks to a lot about Mormons and the way they implement their theology in granite.
And where they spend their money.
Yeah, yeah.
And their
yeah,
resources.
Yeah, definitely. Because you can see the foundation of the temple and how much resource and, you know, they really wanted that thing to stick. But also this sort of strange idea, and it's even stranger today in 2011 because microfiche and record keeping in a vault is pretty well obsolete. I mean, you can make endless copies of things over and over again on very cheap storage. So it's been something that's sort of been put out of circulation. It also speaks to the secrecy of the church, because it's not like they have public tours of the place. You know, there's a security guard standing right out there in front. You're like, what? This is supposed to be genealogy records? What's going on there?
Got to keep him safe from the devil.
Yeah, I think that there's probably more there than microfiche of genealogical records. I mean, putting aside the ability to store things digitally, there's probably a lot of journals and handwritten records and stuff that they want to keep safe from, you know, like an atomic blast, which is supposed to be what the vault can withstand.
Yes, I have heard that it's to survive the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Now, are these vaults different than the ones that contained all the documents that the church actually had in their possession when Mark Hoffman was trying to sell them?
Well, they could
documents?
Be up there.
Are these the same?
There is a theoretical church vault. The church history library used to have one, and then the First Presidency had one, and I don't know if they keep them up there or they keep them in the basement or whatever. I assume it's a big climate control document control center up there, but you know, it is a little weird.
Reminiscent of what the Catholics do.
Do they have a granite vault too? Ooh, do tell.
Is it called the Vatican?
Is this Dan Brown sort of thing?
Yeah, you haven't seen, what's the one with the Pope?
Angels and Demons.
Angels and Demons, yeah.
It's at the Cardio Cinema, so I've seen it in chunks.
Yeah, no, I have no idea if maybe what Dan Brown wrote was completely false, but I thought they had these huge, like, climate control.
Oh, yeah, because they get trapped in there when they're draining the oxygen out. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we should write.
Yeah, but they've got documents from, you know, 400 AD.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Wait, are you saying that the church documents are not as valuable as the Vatican's? What? Don't question the...
They're at least not as fragile.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, number nine. I have really four places that are tied for this. Three of them are a little bit more interesting, but one I have to shout out to. That's Sam Weller's bookstore downtown, Ken Sanders' rare bookstore downtown, Rust Rare Coins. I've never been to Rusty's place. Where is it? Have you ever been there?
No, but something wants to tell me it's in like West Valley. That just seems so appropriate.
See, I was thinking more like Sugar House, but we could look it up, but we're not going to. And then a few blocks down is Benchmark Books. Sam Weller's and Ken Sanders are just one of those. They're both bookstores you could just get lost in for a long, long time. But and Rust Rare Coins is a coin dealer, and Rusty has dealt in rare Mormon stuff. So if you want an old silver sacrament set from the turn of the century that was used in the you know, Salt Lake 13th War, that's who you go talk to. But all these guys know all sorts of stuff about what's going on. If you want the scuttle of what's going on here and there and around, I was just at Benchmark yesterday. I was buying some books, and there was a guy came in, and he had a first edition Doctrine and Covenants, and they're pulling out all their old books and swapping them back and forth. So if that kind of stuff floats your skirt, these are all places to go see. Rust Rare Coins, of course, if you read anything in the Hoffman, they got all pulled into that because they were buying some of the documents and selling some of the documents and used to validate those during the Hoffman affair. So these guys, you know the individuals involved in that sort of thing directly. And Sam Weller's, we always went to his kid there. You go downstairs and you can just dig through their old stacks of who knows what. And last time I was there, they were selling a lot of stuff off for a dollar. And I took a big pile of books up to the, And the guy almost wept, but he says, I'm glad they're not getting, you know, hit in the shredders. So yeah, buy the books before they go away.
But they're moving, right? They're moving to Trolley Square.
I believe so. Yeah. So yeah,
that's
they're probably
good. I heard that
downsizing.
They had gone out of business or were closing business.
They were closing, but it's because it's to move. It's in that location. Yeah. Ken Sanders last year or a year and a half ago had the Smith Bible, the Joseph Smith Bible, and they had it on display there. And there were all these farms guys sitting around it telling stories when I went there. So fascinating places. Ken Sanders was actually at our last live thing that we did with Will Bagley. He was there sitting in the back, and Kurt Bench from Benchmark Books. he's always at Sunstone, and his son Chris is a great guy and can help you find whatever you're looking for. So go hit those, and you can always hit those guys up for great stories. Okay, number 8 on the list. This is the place, State Park and Monument. Always a fun place to go to. A little known fact, you know, in Utah, we celebrate, we don't celebrate the founding of the state like they do in other states. And we don't actually celebrate the time that people came to the state. Because when the Mormons got here, the Indians were all living in Utah Valley. So they were all down there. And Sam Goodyear was living up in Ogden. He had a ranch up there. And Brigham Young was kind of sick, so he was behind. The front party of the front party actually got into Utah on the 21st, and they went down and like plowed the fields. We celebrate the day that Brigham Young came into the valley. That's what we celebrate on the 24th.
So there were people that had decided that this is the place before Brigham Young came into the valley and said, this is the place.
They knew where they were going.
Before they left.
This is one of the big myths.
Oh, BS. We have been taught our whole lives that Brigham Young had a vision. And when he got here,
Smith even was talking about moving here. They knew about this very spot.
And he was sick. He had mountain fever. I don't know what he had. He had probably
syphilis,
diarrhea. and they pulled the wagon up, you know, on the bench there. And he said, this is the right place. Move on. But the guys who had already got there had already started plowing down to the Salt Lake Valley, you know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe you're misreading history. Maybe those people that came in early.
Damn it, I'm not misreading history.
No, I'm just being snarky. I was just going to say, maybe they'd had enough. They're like, we're not going any further west with these people. We're going to stay here, plow us up some fields, put up a shack and call it good, and then keep going west if they want.
Well, Brigham saw the plowed fields. And he's like, oh, I'm moving in on their land.
These miraculous plowed fields. The Lord has left us a sign.
You know, there was some question at some time as to where they would go, and some wanted to press on. But you have to remember that there were a lot of immigrants going out to Oregon, and there were a lot of immigrants going out to California. And one of the things they were looking for was isolation.
Yep.
At the time, it was in Mexico. Some people say, oh, the Mormons were fleeing the United States. It was more ambiguous than that. They were really looking to sort of be left alone. So they were picking a valley where they thought they could do that. And, you know, there's those stories about like Jim Bridger telling him, I'll give $100 to the first guy who grows an ear of corn. But Miles Goodyear had a ranch, was growing stuff. And the trappers who went through the area knew that it's not like,
well, maybe he just didn't think the Mormons had that.
You see these paintings
ability
where they display the Salt Lake Valley. And they'll show, it looks like a windswept desert with sagebrush, like out of a Zane Grey, like cover to one of his old books. It's not what the place looked like. There were several rivers.
There were a lot of deer.
There were deer. There were antelope. There were trees.
Animals.
You know, it wasn't like a fertile, lush valley, but it wasn't like a desert.
Have any? And maybe this is a well-known fact, and I just don't realize it, or maybe it's totally untrue. Are you familiar with that little neighborhood? I guess the Allen Park area. What is it? 13th East. Over by Westminster. What are you eyeballing me?
I'm waiting for it.
What do you mean waiting for it?
Quit eyeballing me, mister. Keep going.
No. Do you know where I'm talking about? The little hobbit houses with all the little...
I've always thought that was a legend. Have you been there?
I have been there.
Are there little,
yes,
little houses?
It's bizarre. And there's lots of little like crudely made cement walls, kind of like cobblestone walls, and someone has taken probably like old pottery and broken tiles, and they have all these weird little like Christian type sayings that are in the walls.
Cool.
And things like that. And they don't really like people to go in there unless you live there. People actually live there, but it doesn't even look like it's from this country, let alone this era in history. But up against the edge of where the end of Allen Park kind of butts up against the mountain, that there's a little sign that says this is the actual place. Like there's a little river, like a little trickle down kind of wash spring. Kind of a thing. Yeah, that comes down over. And that's apparently, legend has it, that that's exactly where the saints came down over into the valley, into that little corner by where the little river was.
I don't know. It's hard to say. When you go up there to this is the place, it's right where the zoo's across the street. And it is off coming down Immigration Canyon. It's off of a little bench. So when you go to the This is the Place monument, which is a great big phallic monolith there.
Yes, it is.
And you can see the valley spread out in front of you. So I mean, it's likely it was somewhere up there. But you know, heavens, they don't.
Well,
they don't
but
know.
Amy's saying that's where they actually came.
It could
down.
Be.
I'm like just their saying. Little one of the little wagon
right.
companies or whatever. But yeah, but you've never been there. Like you really thought it was just a made up place.
I always thought it was just a legend. You know, because there are always these. Oh, this is where all the little people in Salt Lake.
No, I always there, but... I terrorize my daughter with stories about how you can't drive there after a certain period. I mean, the fun part of that. But yeah, that place actually exists. It is actually bizarre. Everything is actually small. And it's kind of like, oh, I don't know, like some kind of Freddy Krueger deal. Like it feels creepy there.
There are some interesting places. Unfortunately, they're not. We can't get them all here. You know, like, well, there's a lot of weird places in Salt Lake, just like in any city.
So This is the Place, State Park. Not only does it have a monument, but it has a recreated pioneer kind of village feel to
right,
it. So
yeah.
You can go in and they have some of the buildings are recreations of old buildings. Some of them they've actually moved to the site and they're the actual, you know, old pioneer buildings. And they've got people in costume and they've got demonstrations of, you know, turning wool into yarn and how to the spinning wheel thing with Sleeping Beauty and no, it doesn't have.
Yeah, it is. It's
and it's got like a little cool little playground for kids. It's a fun place to visit.
I think it's a
with.
Fun place.
It's it's owned by the church, so it's very well funded.
It's not owned by the church.
It is.
It's not owned by the church. It's owned
by
the state.
Did you look this up?
It may be used to have been owned by the church, but it's a
state park.
Yeah,
this is the place
what?
Heritage Center. I really think I think there's a state park out front, but I think the Heritage Center in the back is owned by the church.
It's not because they do some things with I've seen like wine events and haunted things.
Yeah, but that you still
the
haven't convinced me. The church would do that.
Well, I went there with my mom and my sister last year, and they were talking about they were going to do a haunted thing for the kids, and it sounded like a straight up Mormon. Deal, and
they have
we
other
can
things that do not sound
that don't
like
sound that way.
So it's like this is the place Heritage Park. It's not this is the place State Park, but I'm so I don't know. I don't think anybody really cares, but it is a really nice place. The only criticism I would have of it it's there's lots of stuff to see and do up there, and it gives you a good idea of how people lived probably like in the 1870s, 1880s. It's like you would.
Managed and operated by a nonprofit foundation,
and
which is the church.
Foundation is owned by whom? You know, they own lots of not for profits. It does have a romanticized view of things.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the things that I wish they would have is when the Mormons first came into the valley, they built everything out of mud, like they were all like adobe places, and I've never seen, and it must have just been god awful. Because they just would have cut sod and like stacked it up. And that's the way they lived the first 3 or 4 years. And they started cutting cabins. But remember, they didn't get into Salt Lake Valley until July 24th.
When they had to go up into the mountains to get the good timber for actually
right. So
building stuff.
So they weren't, you know, they were only a couple months off of winter. But the most of the party, the 143 people who ever came in, like 3 days later, they all turned around and went back. They only left a small contingency in the Salt Lake Valley. But so it is a highly romanticized view, but it's a really cool place.
One of the best things that I think is one of the best things there is they have one of Brigham Young's homes. And it's the home where he kept Annalisa Young, who was the...
That sounds funny. He kept her.
Well, that's kind of how I view it. Because she, like, didn't... She's the gal that left the church and moved back east and wrote that book.
Well, she's the only
and
wife to officially divorce him.
The 19th wife and went on, like, a speaking tour around the country. And that's where... And I say kept because I kind of wonder if she was causing trouble. And so he sent her out to the farm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But that's where she lived. And I was shocked when I took a tour of that place and they actually said, this is where Brigham Young's wife, Annalisa Young, lived. I was like, whoa, they're advertising that?
They are a lot more open than, say, like Temple Square is. Mm-hmm. But they're still not like putting polygamy in your face or anything, but they are a lot more open with it.
And there are no mission, like official missionaries there.
Okay.
Something else I just thought of, when we took the tour, they have like a guide that tells you about the different rooms, and they have these big open rooms up in the second floor of the house. And they told us that those were rooms where all of the, when they would have like big parties at the house, where all of the kids would sleep on those nights. And I had to wonder if maybe those were just different segments of the house for the different wives. But anyway. Mm.
Sounds fun.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
Number seven. And one thing I want to say about this is the state, this is the place, is when you go visit these, and this is the way it is all over the country, but they become interesting in and of themselves as you can see the different statues and monuments they built at different times. You know, like, I think this is the place that big obelisk was built like in the 50s. And you really get that sort of, as you see the mountain men and the little carvings and the bronze statuary of what they choose to memorialize. It's almost a fun take on a historical take. So I think they built it around the centennial. So it's about, you know, 60, 70 years old now. Okay. Number seven. You kind of have to know where you're going but now you can look it up on the internet. Ensign Peak. Which is a little mountain, well, hill sort of, that is on the north side of the valley. Once you get up to the top of it, you know, it'll take you like 30 minutes to climb it. It's, if you're in reasonable health, you can get up there. It's not like a climb. You don't have to have any gear. But once you get up there, it has this beautiful view of the valley. And the Ensign Peak is where they went up and actually conducted before the temple was built, they would do endowments. They would do prayer circles and stuff up there. I don't know if they ever did endowments, but they would do prayer circles. So they would don their robes and go through the, you know, the signs and tokens of the priesthood. Then they would do the prayer circle up
there. That's not what they tell the TBMs, and that's not what's on Wikipedia.
Really? Well, what do they tell that's why you come to Mormon Express.
Well, when I was reading up on Ensign Peak on Wikipedia, supposedly that peak is what Brigham Young saw and recognized from his vision to make him say, this is the place.
I doubt that he would. It's not really a peak. It's sort of a bench coming off the north side, and it's a little. I doubt he would from immigration. We should do a test. We should go to Immigration Canyon and see if we can see Ensign Peak.
You can't.
But
so why would they say that?
Well, it's correlated history on Wikipedia. That's why. But yeah, I had never heard about the doing outside temple stuff.
If you read William Clayton's journals, and you used to be able to get a copy at Deseret Book, they talk about stop every time they saw a hill, you know, as they were going across, they would stop and they would don their. This is not anything that's secret. This is what's always interesting to me about this. This is well known
that the old journals.
People used to, even in their homes, don their temple robes and do prayer circles. It was only, you know, probably in the latter part of the 19th century they stopped doing that. And probably there's people who kept doing it to the 1940s.
There's probably someone doing it right now. Mm-hmm. Why would they? What? Why was it stopped?
We can only speculate. I would say it's a matter of control.
Because anybody could you know, make themselves some robes and go up on a mountain. And
they wanted to keep it elite in the temple.
Yeah.
Under control. My husband and I have some good friends who were rather TBM. Like, they're a little more open-minded and friendly to non-believers, and they haven't, you know, totally turned against me for not believing anymore. But they're TBMs. And I don't know if they've gone through with it, but they've always had a plan to go up there at night and get some shagging on.
What?
Oh, I'm sure Ensign it happens up there.
Yeah, like out in the open.
There's
so
a
I'll
monument.
Have to tell them what actually happened there.
There is a monument
maybe
up there.
Maybe they could add something special to their shagging.
Maybe
they'll get pregnant if they go up there and do it at that spot. Maybe it's a fertility right now. Dear,
what is the monument to? I can't remember what's up. There's a mini obelisk up there, too.
There is?
It's a broken slab of concrete I saw.
Yeah, but I didn't
if you go all the way up, there's
special
a
special up there.
There is some concrete slabs up there, but somebody built something up there.
I don't remember anything, but
don't you remember sitting on it?
No.
Oh, well.
But that doesn't mean I didn't.
It's there. Okay, number six is sort of modern history of the goings on. The Utah Lighthouse Ministries bookstore, which is there on Is it
Third West Temple?
It's West Temple and 13th South ish.
Yeah, it's just it's right by the baseball stadium.
And it's a little house. It's tucked back.
It's a little house, and the Tanners, Gerald and Sandra Tanner, ran their ministries there for a long time. Sandra is still there most days. Whenever I go there, she always comes coming ambling out of the back. Gerald, of course, died a few years ago. This ground zero in a lot of incidents in the past and a lot of history of arguments going back. Once again, the Hoffman affairs. The Tanners are famous for a lot of things, but in my mind, they're most famous for calling the Salamander letter a fraud when everybody else, including the church, was jumping on the bandwagon. They said that's not a legitimate document, but they have some things on the wall. And the best thing there is they have a lead version of the, is it lead? I don't remember. Now that I'm
Seems
saying
a little dangerous.
Lead, I don't want to touch it, but whatever it is, it's actually a little bit lighter than gold, but of the gold plates. And you can, they challenge you to lift it up. It's about 100-something pounds and then run across the room with it. So they have been, as evangelicals, proselyting the Salt Lake Valley for many, many, many years.
Yeah, they've been the face of anti-Mormon for a long time, haven't they?
Yes, they have.
So who's going to pick up and carry the torch when, or do they?
They have a ministry. I assume she's not the only one there, so there are other people there.
Okay.
But they're interesting people to chat with there. I mean, they are evangelicals. They will try to get you to accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior.
Are they former Mormons?
They are both former Mormons.
Sandra is the great, 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 great granddaughter of Brigham Young.
Yeah. What was her maiden name?
Along with many, many,
Tanner.
Many others.
Gerald was, of course, the Tanner, like N. Mm-hmm. Eldon Tanner, and came from the Salt Lake City Tanners. O.C. Tanner and those guys are all his relatives. So they came from, they were turncoats. They came from inside families.
And also, I think, good to mention is a lot of the books that they have there, they've broken them up into little pamphlet and they're really reasonably priced. So if someone's kind of is interested in picking something up, it's not like what you think of a bookstore when you go to Barnes and Noble. It's a small little home and they have lots of little pamphlets you can get for like $1 or $3. So you don't have to get a new library to learn what they've got. You can pick up little things here and there. And
yeah, they have, they have a lot of reprints of, Lee's book, Confessions, and some of those early Mormon books that are really interesting. They have like E.B. Howe's Mormonism Unveiled in reprint. You get it for a couple bucks. They have one that I got last time I was there on Mormonism and devil worshiping.
Really?
It's kind of a crazy book. But anyway, there's some fun stuff there.
And they have a great newsletter.
Do you subscribe?
Yes, I do.
It's online. There's all sorts of stuff.
I enjoy killing trees when I'm reading my anti-Mormon literature.
Well, good. All right, number five, Gilgal Gardens. Probably the single most fascinating place on the list. It's just plain weird. And this is the best way to find this is drive on 4th South like you're heading to the University of Utah. As soon as you see the Chuck-O-Rama, turn right. And then make an immediate right, and it's in a little house right behind the Chuck-O-Rama.
Well, it's in the backyard.
Yeah, they're behind the Chuck-O-Rama. But this is a house. There was a bishop. What was his first name? His last name was Gilgal. And he was
sort of... Albert or something kind of... That's probably totally wrong. Edit that out.
I like Albert. We'll call him Albert. Brother Bishop Gilgal lived there, and he was one of those bishops who was a bishop for 25 years. And he was an amateur sculptor. And
out of rock,
brick mason, and like he has a self portrait there back there, and the pants are made out of bricks.
Is that where he's coming out of the wall? That one?
Yes, he's like in an alcove.
He does have some very creative things back there.
Pony up to the mic, young lady.
This is my daughter Dupree. She's moved by the spirit to share this testimony of the Gilgal.
I just think that's a really creepy place to go. I mean, I've been there twice, something like that. It's just creepy.
What's creepy about it? Do you think it's haunted?
Probably. It's just weird how it's just weird.
Do you like all the scriptures around and the hands and the heads that are laying
and
around?
The Joseph Sphinx?
No.
Do you enjoy that?
No.
Of course, it's most famous for the Joseph Smith Sphinx. It's a Sphinx that has Joseph Smith's head on it. Fascinating place.
I took my parents, my TVM parents there. I thought, I'm always trying to gently introduce them to some stranger aspects of Mormonism without having to just lay it out there. And so this was I thought interesting, because I mean it's right there in the middle of Salt Lake. You wouldn't know it was there unless you were looking for
most
it, really.
People don't know about it.
And I mean, it was a bishop that did all this. It's kind of, you wonder if he was like slowly going insane. Yeah. As
he was
this
an artist. Aren't all artists,
I know,
slightly?
But still, but you don't expect a bishop with has won that much free time to sculpt all this stuff, but then it's just the interpretations of it are just absolutely bizarre.
They are weird. And he did some scriptures out of Jeremiah or Revelation or stuff that he interpreted. And when you walk through, these things weren't like pieces of work that he did and then they brought here. This was his backyard, and this was how it was when he died. It was just...
He has like a brick oven over in the corner, and like the head of his wife is in it or something. Like she's a bust, and it looks like a brick oven that she's sitting in.
Weird place. And like you said, he was completely active in the church. This is not some anti-Mormon like stick it in your face, Joseph Smith. This is the real deal.
It's really cool though, and they've got some preservation efforts in place, and
because I guess some of the things are starting to deteriorate a little bit. So,
Gilgal Gardens, number 5.
If you feel moved to donate to that cause, I'm sure they'd appreciate it.
I have to say, I must do pre. It actually caused me to have a nightmare. That
really?
Place did, yeah.
Well, it is bizarre. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it.
I had some friends that I didn't even know it was called Gilgal. I didn't know that there was a name for it. I didn't know it was a park. It was described to me as some guy's backyard, and they referred to it as Fry God Park, because they would take acid and they would climb over this guy's fence and they would trip balls for hours in this little park in Gilgal Park. And I can't even imagine being on a hallucinogenic in that park, because seriously itself is a hallucinogenic experience. Fry God Park.
I think it's one of the best things about Salt Lake City, honestly. It's a clever little thing there.
It is. Yeah. It's cool. Okay. Number 4, up by the Capitol building, is the Daughters of Utah Pioneer Museum. And probably why this is my favorite of all the museums around it. There's a plaque right there in the lobby that says, you know, we have this sacred, solemn, promise to everybody who's given anything that comes into these doors will never go out of these doors. And it is a great eclectic collection of every doily that you would ever want to see.
All kinds of just anything that people happen to have, like any kind of something from pioneer days. It could be, like John said, a doily. It could be a pair of
socks. They have a whole floor dedicated to doilies.
It's not dedicated.
Well, they've got at least a hallway full of doilies.
It's by the shrine to knitting and over by the tablecloth hall.
And the thimbles.
That's on the upper floors. You can skip those. But on the main floor, my favorite thing about the museum is there's all this just strange, just like rabbly, just junk and shit. And then there'll be like something really fascinating.
Right. A gem.
And there's no like, hey, this is like our crown
piece. This is special.
Right.
This is the cane that Willard Richards used to whack the guy during the martyrdom.
And it's with like 15 other canes.
Yeah, it's sitting there with a rack of 20 canes, you know. And so you have to like dig through it to find, you know, like they have Joseph Smith's Masonic...
talisman?
Not the Jupiter talisman, but the one with the bird on it that Quinn writes about. It's just sitting there in a glass
case.
Isn't
the Jupiter one Brigham Young's?
The Jupiter one was at the Wilfred Wood Museum up in Bountiful.
They have reproductions of the death mask, Joseph Smith's death.
Yeah,
death
but mask. The original's on the bottom, kind of shoved over in the corner. You gotta like, wait, hey, me, what is that?
Right.
So. And oh, and they have a lock of Joseph Smith's hair. That was pretty cool.
They have a two-headed lamb there too.
They have the cane that was supposedly made out of Joseph Smith's coffin. Uh-huh. And just all sorts of weird, cool stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's a fun place to go through.
My favorite thing that I found there was a talisman that Brigham Young wore around his neck for protection. In that back room on the main floor where all of the Brigham Young stuff is.
Yeah, definitely. You can see sort of how they processed the world because it's all their little gewgaws and junk. Mm. Their talismans, their good luck charms, all the medicine they
take. Their fake legs.
Have you guys ever noticed? I mean, we talk about medicine, but you look at like what they did and like, you're like, none of this is any good at all. In the 19th century, you should have just stayed clear of doctors, like nothing they
were
doing.
Well, that's what Brigham Young taught them.
He was right.
He was like, stay away from doctors. They just want to kill you.
Well, they have like old forceps and stuff, like all kinds of weird little medical instruments and dental things. And then they have the
dolls,
the knitting floor, which, you know, the tatted lace.
A lot of tea sets.
Yes. A lot of tea sets, yeah. Yeah, stuff that was like you got from your grandma that was too valuable to throw away, but you didn't know what the hell to do with. That's what's at the DVD.
Yeah, there's like a whole floor of that, for real. Like all the quilts. Really? Yeah. Well, I think after five quilts,
yeah, but how do you throw the sixth one out?
You don't throw it away. You just box it up.
Yeah, you archive it.
Well, apparently the sixth one was cool too.
And they wanted the 150th one now, but.
Okay, number three on the list is the Salt Lake City Cemetery. A lot of notables buried here. And I, you know, in any city, any old city, you can get a better feel for what was going on by who's got like the monuments and who's got the
fence around their plot.
Right. But it's just a fascinating old, and some people would say creepy.
Do you think the cemeteries? No, it's as close to a Gothic cemetery as you're going to find in Salt Lake or Utah for that matter. It's gorgeous.
I've never been there.
So fun.
I have never strolled through it. I have to admit, I've been around it. You can buy maps like, you know, like they sell in Hollywood, like Map to the Stars. You can buy maps around that show you where all the general authorities are.
I can't believe either one of you haven't.
When we first
need to go on a date there, John.
When we first got married, we lived right by the Provo City Cemetery, and we would go there all the time, and it was great. And we talked about that in the Masonry podcast and all the carvings on all those old markers. And
we need to make a trip up there.
It's cool because they have the prophets and whatnots that were buried, and so many of them. I mean, they have such big plots because all of their wives are buried near them, and their, you know, wife of so and so, and then the other wife on the other side, and all their children, the other wife on the other side, and all their children.
Yeah, if you want to believe to yourself that polygamy was only practiced by what the church claims 2% of the population, go to the big cemeteries. Go to the Logan Cemetery, the Ogden Cemetery, the Bountiful Cemetery, the Salt Lake Cemetery.
Provo Cemetery.
They are full of these guys with all their wives around the different sides, and it was readily practiced.
I think if you live in Salt Lake City, you should not get a map and just go take several walks through there. That's what my husband and I did in our early dating days. And it was fascinating. We would look for like the earliest headstones we could find. And then you'd stumble on, you know, an old general authority. There's a big monument to Hiram and Joseph Smith in there. There's some cool stuff. My dad asked me if he needed to get me a shovel so I could actually meet Brigham Young. he thought it was weird that I was walking through there, but I think it's a...
Why would it be weird? I want to go through and do like some gravestone rubbings.
What's the... You that have a dirty thing on your Facebook about... Super weird headstone. I don't remember what it is though.
I can't remember her name, but it says... is it like killed by the beast or something? Yeah. 666.
Her
husband is the one that, I mean.
Is the beast?
I think that is the truth of the story.
Are you kidding?
But,
Okay, that's giving me the creeps.
I'll have to. Well, John, you can go to my Facebook and you can put that on the website, maybe on the intro, because, yeah, it's creepified.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's there too.
Doesn't
have
a
whole Jewish section.
Well,
that's really cool.
Necessarily Mormonism, but
I think she was
section.
Mormon, and then it went crazy. Mm. And maybe she thought she was possessed or something. I don't know, but I think it was her husband that maybe drove her to insanity, and like her family or something had that put on there. She was killed by the beast
maybe
or something.
Maybe they were the crazy ones.
Maybe. I don't know. Who would put that on a headstone?
Well, see, I'm saving. I have a special fund. Zilpah doesn't know about this, but I'm saving money aside, and I'm going to buy a plot in one of the few cemeteries that let you build up big. And I want a big gothic. I mean, I want the Grim Reaper.
Wait, hold on. I thought you wanted to be buried in a wood box that would decay
underneath
along
this thing.
With you.
So
why is it that my dad wants the same thing? A wooden box.
I want weeping angels, and I want just this big grandiose gothic thing with Latin and Greek all over, just so people say, "Who the hell was this guy?"
He was the great John Larson.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be great. You just have to have a great headstone.
And this were this all of his wives, Zilpah.
Look, I mean, for the
that's true.
Company.
You have to have something that, you know, 200 years from now, they're going to be like, I mean, yeah, that guy.
For the
was
price
bomb.
Of a Toyota Corolla, you can have the grandest monument in the Western United States. And why we don't spend our money that way, you know?
Well,
you have to leave a legacy.
Because once you're dead, you're dead, and you don't care anymore.
That's not true. He'll be looking down from the Telestial Kingdom.
Isn't the Telestial Kingdom here? No, that's the Celestial Kingdom.
That's right.
No,
the world will regain
here.
Its paradisical glory.
Yes, and become a great big ball of glass. I read that book.
On which we want to
what
live.
What book is that?
The DNC.
The Doctrine of Covenants.
I just revealed my ignorance. I'm sorry.
All right.
Not possible.
We haven't worked the Dummies series yet, so I will forgive you.
DNC is one of the few books I haven't read.
It doesn't make any sense, so don't feel too bad.
I thought Alma was easier to get through than DNC.
I liked Alma with those like troops running around the hills and fighting it out in the middle of the rivers.
I'm not an action movie gal, so I'm not an action scripture gal either.
All right. Number two. Here's the next highly controversial points. Number two and number one.
Yep.
Number two, I have Temple Square. And I've included in Temple Square the Temple Square itself. Now, Temple Square is really two blocks. There is on the west side is the actual what used to be called the Temple Square. The great big wall is. I was taught the wall was to keep out the heathens,
the riffraff.
When Jesus comes back.
The beggars.
So there's a great big like 12-foot wall. I mean, it's a substantial wall with it's got iron spikes on top of it. And when the protest, was it a year ago, 2 years ago, when they surrounded Temple Square? They closed the gates on that sucker.
What do you mean, the protest?
The one that we were at?
After Boyd K. Packer said, why would God do such a thing? Then
we had the
lay down, the protest of silence.
Yeah, yeah. We have an episode that we recorded live at it.
Dupree and I went as a family. We protested that together.
So,
took our kids.
So Temple Square... And on Temple Square itself, on we're talking the west side, there is the Kissing Corridor, the main street that they shut down, and then the First Unitarian Church sued the church over that because the city, it was kind of a backhanded deal, and the city just gave them this like the main street of Salt Lake City, and then
did they get to keep it?
Yes, they First Church. We were there when they voted to drop the lawsuit. Do you remember? Mm. It was historic. Mm. And then on the east side is the church office building and the old Relief Society building and the old Hotel Utah, which now they call the Joseph Smith building.
And the old church administration building.
And the church administration building. They're not open to the public. I mean, you could walk in there, but they're just all business offices. Same with the Relief Society building. But you can go into the church office building, the COB.
Now, okay. And it has the temple. Don't forget
that's in Temple Square. So
you're dividing it, but I didn't get the clear
division. Yeah, I'm giving people a walk around. And then back to the Temple Square where the wall is, there is the temple. Then there is the assembly hall, which is a really gothic church-looking thing. And then there is the conference center. And there are two...
You forgot the tabernacle.
Oh, the tabernacle is what I'm talking about. And there's the North and South Visitor Center. The North Visitor Center is one that has Space Jesus in it. Mm. And then the south one has some.
It has the diorama
the
thing
replica of the
temple.
I want to
so
go look
see
at it.
Inside,
oh yeah, that's cool.
And it is cool.
Then on the north side is where they built the Meganapple.
And John thinks that all of this stuff is number two.
Well, I've excluded part of it. And then across the street over on the west side is the genealogical library and the church history.
Okay, but it's all one big package.
Well, would you cut out Gilgal Gardens to do?
No, I would put this at number one and the number one at number two.
No, you're wrong.
I have an idea. You know, in the Olympics, when two people score the same score, and so they like have 1, 2, 2, 4. That's how we should put this. 1, 1, 3.
There you go.
Okay, so this might be number one.
Woo!
So the one of the reasons I didn't want to put Temple Square, when you go to Temple Square, first of all, they literally have about 40 pairs of missionaries in the one city block.
Hot sister missionaries.
If you're looking for that kind of thing,
But only half of them speak English, so you're good to go there. But they are rather attractive. Although I've heard some people say that the attractive level is going down. I don't know if that's...
Maybe they just met it.
Maybe they were just picky.
Yeah.
But like every time you enter or exit a building, there's a set of missionaries there ready to pounce.
And several in between.
And the museums are kind of interesting, but they are very...
propagandish.
Yeah. Like there's a you got to go see, is it in the... It's in the North Visitor Center. Downstairs, they have these dioramas from the history of the world. And I have a picture of this I'll post. They have the Book of Mormon, and they have like all these Mesoamerican... like writings on the diorama, and they used to have a diorama of Adam offering fruit up on a altar, but somebody pointed. Yeah, he had this altar that he was sacrificing to God, but it was full of fruits and vegetables. And somebody, I guess, eventually pointed out that that's what Cain was offered.
Oh, don't you love it?
Museums across the street?
See, we argued about this. They have the new library, which is interesting if you're into that sort of thing. But it is a big library. You know, we're kind of aiming this around tourist things. You'd go and say, "Yep, that's a library."
Well, but they've got the Museum of Church History and Art.
Yeah,
and they've got a lot of cool things like the real Death Mass.
Do they still have them on display?
The real Book of Mormon.
And they've got they've got huge paintings of all the current general authorities.
There used to be a room in there. I have not been since they redid it. They used to have a room that had all the paintings of all the dead general authorities. I guess when they died in the CLB, they'd walk them across and put them in this room.
And
it's
they
a
have
fascinating study in facial
them.
Hair. This
museum is probably a pretty good place to go if you want to see some church
history. It's no DUP museum, but it's one of those things. This is my complaint in general about modern museums.
Presented.
You go into an 800 square foot room, and there'll be these big posters and crazy little architectural things. There'll be like one artifact sitting on a velvet thing.
Light on it.
I like the old glass case, packet full of all kinds of stuff museums myself, but... if you want the church history, what's your favorite stuff in there?
The second floor is all the paintings of the old general authorities, and they have like memorabilia that belong to them. The most interesting thing to me is that down by the bathrooms is a huge, huge painting of the vision of the tree of the knowledge, or no,
oh,
the tree of life or whatever that Lehi Nephi dream was. It's also the place where they have some of the art that's made by the guy who was featured in This American Life.
Oh.
That painter.
Oh, yeah.
Some of his stuff is there.
Oh, cool.
So,
yeah. So I think it's probably a good place to go. And they're supposed to have this children's area that has different eras.
Where you can pretend to be a missionary?
No. Well, maybe. Maybe they have that area too, but they have where you can pretend to be like a homemaker in the 40s or whatever.
Oh, just what I have wanted to do.
So
it's supposed to be fun.
The going around Temple Square, there's some interesting things. There's some statues that have been there a long time. The original Nauvoo Bell is there that they hauled across the plains. The tabernacle itself is a fascinating building, especially when you say they sat watched conference in these little tiny pews.
When they always do the needle test and show you the acoustics of the building, because you can hear the needle drop at the front. And then
I love the assembly hall. It's the most underrated building. It is a beautiful, beautiful church.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like a church. It doesn't look like
They used to do ceilings and stuff there, didn't they?
That was in the endowment house, and when they were going trying to get statehood, and there was the post manifesto polygamy, Joseph F. Smith had it torn down to prove that they weren't doing it anymore.
So it just doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. And now you can actually get up close. When I was a kid, you couldn't. The temple square was divided in two, and you couldn't get close to the temple. And now you can get up close and personal with it and see all the Masonic carvings.
But to be clear, you can only see the outside of the temple unless you're a card carrying member. But it's a cool building.
The Meganapple is interesting. The tabernacle, or what do they actually call it?
The conference center.
Yeah, I was what's a Meganapple?
The neat thing about it is they've got these gardens on top,
and they have a waterfall that goes to it. The fascinating thing to me is always man, I know what a granite kitchen countertop costs. This thing must have cost a bazillion dollars. It is huge. It is ornate. And it is...
It's a very, very nice
conference center. I think Gordon B. Hinckley's headstone up at the Salt Lake Temple is built from or made from a piece of granite that came from scraps. I don't know if that's disrespectful to say. From the new conference center.
If you like scraps, when you're driving north on or south on I-15, just south of the church... grain silos. There's a boneyard where the church keeps all of its scrap stone right there. You can see it right off the freeway. Look, see, only on Mormon Expression can you find out where they keep their spare granite.
And don't forget the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, and they have that awesome movie about Joseph Smith that's completely factual.
The Joseph Smith Memorial Meeting is the old Hotel Utah. Which is a beautiful building in and of itself. Yeah, there is the theater, and there is a restaurant up on the top. And that's it's got to be 100 years old or so. And it was sort of designed to try to put the church on the map. So it was one of the big buildings at the time, and it's beautiful in sort of a non-Mormon, just conventional manner.
And they also have the family history library in there.
Yeah. If you want missionaries to try to tell you how to do your genealogy.
You'll feel underdressed if you go in jeans and a t-shirt in there, I found through experience. Felt very out of place since I wasn't all dressed up and nice looking.
And the Brigham Young, in the Kissing Plaza, there is the old Brigham Young statue that used to be in the center of State and Maine.
This thing.
Yeah, where he's got his hand out.
Give me everything you have.
And John thinks this should be number two. Okay, no, never mind. You said it could be tied for number one.
And State in Maine is the old Eagles Gate. Mm-hmm. It's ground zero for Mormonism.
Yes. Well, and up the street on, was it First Avenue? Is okay, I don't
I
know.
I wanted to wait till the very end and say I think that should get an honorable mention.
Okay. Okay, so let's go to number one. Number one.
Sorry.
I just got shushed.
You got shut down.
I got shut down. There will be none of that.
Okay, so number one is actually technically on Temple Square 2, and that to me is the Beehive and the Lion House, which is Brigham Young's residence. So it shares the same block with the church office building and the...
His main residence.
He had two main residences, one in St. George. He wintered in St. George, and then he had his one here. And as he got older, he didn't travel around as much. He just went to St. George and then back. Right now, they only give tours of the Lion House. So the Lion House was where his office...
No. Beehive House.
Okay, yeah, I'm saying it backwards. They only give tours of the Beehive House. That was his main residence where he kept his trophy wife.
It was also the original church office building.
It was. Actually, there is a little annex between the two where the church office, or the clerks worked.
Yeah.
And you
they
can
have
see
all
that
those
in the
cool
tour.
Desks and stuff. And
So you get to see... Really, what's fascinating about it, it's fascinating on several levels. You get to see sort of how Brigham Young lived, and you know, the state of Utah and Mormonism was really made by Brigham Young, and they've done a really great job preserving it. But what I find fascinating is how quickly Brigham Young accumulated wealth. And if you pay attention while you're getting the tour, you gotta keep your head about you. You can see other things, like you can see the slaves' quarters, and you can see, you can see different things that they're not exactly going to tell you about. There's a lot of things that if you ask, they will tell you what that's all about. But the tour
sometimes
itself does not mention polygamy at all.
They do.
Really? Last time
I was there.
Without being prompted?
They mentioned it?
You and I went through. Or were they prompted, though? Did I?
They always get prompted. Some asshole always asks.
I'm the prompter, him and I. Usually.
It was him and I in the tour. We went late on a Sunday, right before they closed.
How long ago? I had to drag him through.
2009, 2010. We weren't married. 2009.
I think it went about 2.5 months ago.
And they didn't say anything?
I've been through probably 4 or 5 times, and they've never offered that up at all.
I wasn't like giving him a hard time or anything, but I wasn't, you know, just like going along with the show. I asked them questions. So maybe I did prompt them.
But when you prompt them, they have this memorized spiel.
I asked them specifically about it, I said, so you're saying that Brigham Young had family prayer in this room with 50 children and, you know, 20 some odd wives. How did they all fit in this little room? And they were like, you know what? I don't know.
They always give me the I don't know. How many what? When I went with my mother just recently, there was a law enforcement convention in town. And so there were a lot of out of town, out of state people that were kind of coming through as in large groups during breaks of whatever convention they were having. And depending, I'm sure, on how busy of a season it is, they lengthen and shorten the tour considerably. And they have changed a lot of some of the, basic, like the Deseret alphabet used to be in the clerk's office and, some of the clothing and things like that. But I remember there was a bunch of people that are like, Brigham Young, wasn't he the one that was a polygamist? And they will never address any comments. Mm-hmm. And when one of the women actually raised her hand and said, how many wives did he actually have? Their answer, I don't know.
We don't know.
They specifically do not teach them so that they can just say, I don't know.
When we were on the East Coast, we went to a lot of different historical sites. And what's amazing to me about the missionaries at that site, not necessarily other sites, is how little they know. They put the young women in there, and I think they specifically don't tell them anything.
That's terrible. They
legitimately do not know anything about that. But, you know, like I was saying, I think it's fascinating because Brigham Young's concept of wealth, like he would take this local wood, these great woods and paint them to look like pine or whatever.
Marble.
And he would paint things to look like marble
or oak.
And it's just, you know, here you have it from like 30 years after they got to the valley. And like I said, they were living in adobe mud huts to just the opulence of that place. How much wealth the church, because the church in Brigham Young didn't really separate their wealth, how much wealth he accumulated so quickly. And they say, oh, well, it's because we had to entertain dignitaries and stuff, but they were shipping all this really expensive stuff back from the East, these curtains and just everything. So it is a fascinating look. When I was a kid, I have a memory, and I'll put this out there to Mormon Expression fans because maybe I'm off base, but the Lion House now in the basement, they have a restaurant.
The Pantry.
And you can go eat there. It's a pretty good restaurant. But when I was a kid, they used to give tours of the Lion House. And I remember it because they had this pipe system to communicate from the upstairs down to the downstairs into the kitchen.
They have that at the Lion House too. At the Beehive House.
And they would say, well, every gable that you see, if you go look at the Beehive, the Lion House, and there's all these gables up top, boom, boom, boom. And they were all apartments for all the different wives who lived up there, like, Eliza lived there, and there were like not all the wives, but 9 or 10 of them lived up there, and that's where they had the big communal kitchen. So when you go over to the Beehive House, they have a small kitchen. I mean, it's not like small; they would be like a wealthy landowner. But there was a huge kitchen over in the other one. So that's why I say it literally was Brigham Young's trophy wife, where when people would come in from out of town, he would sort of represent himself as a monogamist, and he had the one family that lived there, while the other family lived in the other house. And you kind of have to poke and prod to get that information out of them, but it's there.
They have you been on the tour where they take you to where the pantry was?
The little store.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they call it the pantry, but it was essentially just a store for all the wives to, you know, schlep in and get what food they need and schlep out.
Yeah, and it does reveal some about how Brigham Young organized his families and how he thought things should happen. Brigham Young was very much of the, you're a man who has as much as you can control, and you're responsible for the domain of all those people. So he had a little private store just for his family where they could come in and barter and trade for goods for his wives, you know. And it was like, well, what about Heber Kimball's family? Well, Heber's responsible for that. That's his, what do they call it when in priesthood when you have an area of control?
It's not dominion, but...
There's a code word for it, yeah, in Mormonism. Anyway.
We've lost all of our sacred languages.
Yeah, that's his stewardship. So, yeah, it's
but
it's
I did
cool
read that a lot of the things in the house that are decorating the house were not original to the house. They're original to the time period.
Well, because, you know, they would have been
moved
covered
in
soot and stuff.
Yeah. Well, that it hasn't always been either his house or a museum. It was the ladies' dormitory for the business college, I think, for a long time. Huh. And
so they had to kind of
redo it when they made it a museum.
It's a gorgeous home, and the woodwork, some of the carving and the stair banisters and the steps and the bookshelves.
And interesting and fun to go through. I just would put it at number two.
Well,
because there's so much more on Temple Square, and the temple itself is so...
You can't get into the
symbolic
temple.
I know, but it is a symbolic center of Mormonism.
Well, but it's a symbolic center of Mormonism, but the Beehive House was the center of Mormonism. It's right there. That's the power seat.
Well, that's
And it really gives you a glimpse. You know, here's a sleight of hand they do in there. They say Brigham Young was a carpenter and he liked to carve. There's all these ornate carvings because he's a carpenter. No, because he's bloody rich. He could buy all those things, you know. It's not because he was a carpenter that he had all that stuff.
You mean he didn't carve most of it?
No.
But they do spend
They showed us
there.
A clock that he had carved, but apparently it came in some kind of kit.
And he went to Sweden and learned how to make the springs work.
No, it came in a kit, and like he just kind of put it together and then carved some stuff on it.
And he also didn't sleep with his wives.
No, he had his own little separate bedroom.
Yeah, Brigham Young actually didn't think much of women. He didn't like women's company very much.
Wasn't it his bedroom was tied to like the little, was kind of hooked onto that, the receiving area where people could come in.
And the women were not allowed in it at all.
Well, they spin that, when you take the tour, they spin that as he was up at all times of the day and night, meeting people and taking care of the needs of his flock, and he didn't want to bother his wife and his family.
See, I was told that not too many women were around him. It's because they were so fiercely independent. Honestly, that's what one of them told me. Some of his wives were just far too independent. They liked to live alone.
So there you go.
Well, probably I would prefer living alone to the other.
Maybe he was a tiger in bed or something. Maybe
ew. I just imagine him like with this big barrely belly.
Now don't knock barrely belly.
No, but on Brigham Young, just his stature kind of, and that he probably had like little lifts in his shoes and his little high heel boots, and he was maybe a little bit pigeon toed. He was kind of strutted around like F. Lee Bailey. That's my fantasy of Brigham Young.
F. Lee Bailey. So there you go. Zilpha says Temple Square should be number one. And in my defense, the Beehive House is on Temple Square. So really, number one and two were...
Is Temple Square.
Okay, got it.
So it's one and one and then three.
There you go.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool stuff there to see.
Oh, and we forgot to mention the temple grounds. They do they put a lot of money and effort into making the grounds with beautiful flowers, beautiful trees.
And you have to go see it at Christmas sometime.
Yeah, they've got
hopefully got the baby manger of Joseph right next to the baby manger of Jesus.
And I just mentioned Space Jesus. You guys didn't even, that's pretty cool.
Oh yeah,
Space Jesus
Christus
is white. Awesome.
Jesus and the stars behind him.
Yeah, yeah.
The Christus.
Yeah, I think Christmas and springtime are the best times to go because you'll get all the beautiful flowers and then all the lights. Mm. Although Christmas is kind of a headache. If you don't like crowds, you're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it is crowded.
It gets crowded, but not as crowded as it used to be now that like Thanksgiving Point and it's not as...
It's not the place to see lights.
And since they tore up... Now, just south of Temple Square is going to be the mall, which is coming along, which will be a pretty cool mall.
It is going to be cool.
It's going to be the Gateway 2. I am not looking forward to it.
The Gateway 2.
The Gateway to...
No, like the Gateway Mall.
The Gateway Mall.
It's going to be an extension of that.
Should we announce it? We're opening up a coffee shop in the mall called Temple Grounds.
That's right.
I used to work at a coffee shop with a bunch of stoners called Higher Grounds.
All right, all right. So there you have it. So what did we leave off the list? You guys had your honorable mentions.
Yeah, I wanted to have an honorable mention. There's an apartment complex that I kind of have wanted to live in called Brigham View Apartments. That's right there on like South Temple and State Street, right there on the corner, kind of.
You've really wanted to live there?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never lived in a big, huge complex like that. They have a pool. I thought, man, I could just like hop out of bed and go lap swimming every morning. But anyway, I found out why it's called Brigham View. It's called Brigham View because it's like literally surrounds and you can go out on your back porch and like look down on Brigham Young's grave.
Is that the one where is that the church owned one?
Yeah, it's where his actual body is.
No, I mean the apartments.
Are they owned by the church?
One of those apartment complexes there is owned by the church, and there's a tunnel from there to tunnel
system. It's the one that's on South Temple.
It's where Benson and those guys Kimball used to have their apartments.
Oh, I don't think
sure
it's the same one.
I don't think they would have a pool there.
Yeah, no, this one I think is just a general. And it's not new. Right on the corner. It's down the roadways. Oh, okay. There's like one or two more apartment complexes between that and State Street. But yeah, what I shushed Amy about was Brigham Young's plot. He's got like a whole little thing on First Ave. His wives are in there.
Cabin thing that's there.
Yeah, and there's a cabin that's just on the south. East side, that's supposedly an 1847 cabin.
The only
problem I have it with it is it's just sort of, there's, in every park in Utah, there's a pioneer cabin, you know, so it's not really that, and I think it's a little bit misrepresentative of the way they actually lived in Salt Lake, for those first few years, so, and it's not really having to do with Mormonism. The honorable mention I have is, of course, the Capitol building, which is an extension of the church, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting stuff up there, to see.
Oh, and didn't you mention Saltaire used to be owned by the church?
Well, it was supposedly partly owned by the church, and it was supposed to be like the upstanding place you could go to have fun. Like, you wouldn't be considered, sinning.
If you went to a party or dance there.
Yeah, because some little clip thing said that you'd often like find yourself riding back with like the upstanding members in town. Church leadership or something, I don't know.
Now, these are all church things. One point, Zilf and I were talking about doing a Mormon Expression walking tour of Salt Lake. If we get enough people who want to do it, maybe we'll do it. But the old red light district where they built a wall around there was a berm built around the red light district. That's about on like 3rd South. And places where there were gunfights Salt Lake City was a wild town.
How do you know all this?
What defines red light district at that time?
Book. Okay. so up until the internet, we had these things called prostitutes.
We still have them and they are on the internet.
Exactly. But before that, before there were streetwalkers, there were whorehouses everywhere. And there were plenty of them in Salt Lake City. And they were all in one district. And they built this berm around it.
To try to pretend that they weren't there.
But there was this huge section of brothels in Salt Lake City.
Sweet.
Yeah.
John knows. John knows
where they find the prostitutes in every town.
I'm probably saying the wrong name, but there's a book out there written by somebody at Westminster College called Petticoats and Pedestals or something like that. That supposedly talks about.
Yeah, there's a.
Polygamy and prostitution and all sorts of stuff.
Really?
But I could be saying the wrong name. Petticoats and Pedestals could be something else. That could be like the women's lib movement.
Parasols and petticoats. I thought that was.
There's a great book by Signature Books called The Utah's Lawless Fringe. That's where I read about the red light district. But yeah, so.
I think the David Ebershoff, The 19th Wife book also talks about it. But I think that he uses the actual book of Anna Liza Young because he weaves those two stories together.
I have a PDF of that Anna Liza book that I am willing to share if people want it.
I think it's online.
Yeah,
too.
That's where I got it.
Okay,
if you don't want to go digging for it, I'll just send it to you.
I don't want to make it sound like Salt Lake had a particular prostitution problem. It was probably pretty normal, you know, in terms of any city. So,
but come on out to Salt Lake, people, and visit those old Mormon sites.
It's a cool city, and there's a lot of other places. Anyway, that don't necessarily have things to do with the church.
Everybody's gonna be flocking here after they watch the Book of Mormon movie because it is Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake.
And everybody wants to come here, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. All right. Any last minute thoughts on places to see with the church in Salt Lake? Okay. Well, as always, the discussion continues. Go ahead and post your favorite Mormon or even non-Mormon sites up in Salt Lake on the board, and we'll keep talking about it there. Ladies, thanks for the wonderful evening.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.